been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. The road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
It's picked up by Armia. Tight turns there on the near side corner. Centered out in front, the shot by Mathias. They score! Sean Mathias, he only had to set it up and wait for that pass right along the ice to come to him. He wasted no time, and Winnipeg has opened up the scoring. It's 1-0 Jets.
And with that goal at the 8:29 mark of the second period, the Winnipeg Jets went on to a 1-0 victory in Denver last night, defeating the Avs by that margin. That Mathias goal with the beautiful pass from Joel Armia is the only goal that scored last night as the Jets defeat the Avs by a 1-0 margin and move to 4-4 on the season, even their record in division at 2-2. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoban, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca. Good morning, Universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Tons of Winnipeg Jets content. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can reach us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in the TSN 1290 Broadcasting Center. Gentlemen, Ezra, Dave, a very gutsy, I would say, a character win for the Winnipeg Jets, holding on to win by that 1-0 margin. Michael Hutchinson, after some questions about the Jets' goaltending, Connor Hellebuck gives up one goal the night earlier against Dallas. Then Hutchinson goes in and posts the Jets' first shutout of the season by this 1-0 margin. And everything for now, after two straight consecutive wins, everything is hunky-dory in Winnipeg Jets land.
Yeah, it was an impressive win for the Jets coming off of a loss in Dallas on Tuesday night. They pick up a couple of wins back-to-back, guys, but I wouldn't exactly say it's hunky-dory for the Winnipeg Jets. They've certainly played well the last three games here, but you have to follow that up with a good performance against the Buffalo Sabres, or it doesn't mean much, right? And the Buffalo Sabres are one of the weakest teams right now in the league as far as their record goes, and when you consider that Evander Kane is out with an injury, Jack Eichel's out with an injury, the Jets should be able to beat the Sabres on Sunday and have three wins in a row, but you never know what can happen. Buffalo gets a good performance from their goaltender, and they're still a talented group. So absolutely, Drew, I think it was very impressive last night, and you know, the Jets, I thought, were clearly the better team in the first period, and mm-hmm. Colorado had been off for 5 days, and I thought that they got better as the game went on, but you know, we played the clip of Sean Mathias's goal. They only needed one goal, but you got to give Michael Hutchinson a lot of credit, guys. And Dave, he struggled here early on. I don't think he was very good in his first few games, but boy, was he really good, especially in that third period, made some key saves. So yeah, the Jets are feeling a lot better than they were after the Heritage Classic. They dropped the Heritage Classic, didn't score any goals. And, you know, sometimes second game of a back-to-back, you need to win a game 1-0, and you need to kind of just hold on. And I thought that they played really well in their own zone, too. And that's something that, you know, in the first four or five games, the Jets were struggling a lot with. And I thought Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien probably had their best game as a pair. So you got to give the Jets credit here. It's still early, but certainly nice to pick up a couple of wins after you lost two in a row.
You know, the attitude in the dressing room was, I don't want to say surly, but you could see that the players weren't happy with the level of play following the loss in Dallas. And so, you know, and it was interesting because Matthew Perreault basically called the game against the Stars like almost like a must win. I thought, was that?
Just go on.
No, and I was just going to say, like, to me, that was an interesting comment simply because, like, I was like, wow, it's very early in the season. And, you know, like, nobody's really, like, leapt ahead of them. I mean, we're only, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 games in for some of these teams. So, like, it's, you know, and you obviously want to bank points at this point, at any point in the year. But, you know, he called it a must win. I thought, okay, that's an interesting comment. And then they go out and beat Dallas. And then, you know, it was important to not have a letdown game. You know, like as just said, you've got 5 days off for a Colorado team that, you know, might have a little bit of rust. They did, you know, they showed it in the first period, and the Jets took advantage and you know, came out and played, to their credit, played a very strong game. And it was an important 2 points to pick up against a rival in the Central Division.
Yeah, I mean, your discussion there about how the game sort of flowed is exactly as I thought it would. The Jets, you know, play the night before, so they still have some energy. They still have some legs under them to start the game, whereas Colorado is rusty to start the game. And the Jets were the better of the two teams in the first period, certainly. Weren't able to get that opening goal until the Sean Mathias goal that ended up being the game-winning goal. And then the latter half of the game, you could see the Jets were struggling, particularly, you know, playing in a place like Denver with the thin air. It's a little more difficult. And you could see that as the game, you know, got closer to the end of the game, they were struggling, and Colorado was able to find their legs underneath them. But the Jets were able to your point, Ezzy, about Michael Hutchinson. He was their best player when he needed to be for the last 20 minutes of the game last night.
Well, and that's what they needed, because it looks like the Jets are going to go with the famous Maurice rotation here for at least the early part of the season, because nobody, I don't think, has really stolen the job. And, you know, you could argue that Connor Hellebuck, you know, should get more starts, because you know that he's kind of the goalie of the future, if not the present, right? But certainly Michael Hutchinson, you know, he had a couple of rough starts, and, you know, he picks up a shutout, and I wouldn't say he stole the game. The Jets played a very smart game, guys. They were very good in their own zone, managed the puck really well, all of those cliche things that coaches talk about, but it was true. The Jets didn't make any mistakes. I thought they used their speed really well. You know, I was talking to Dave before the show. The Colorado Avalanche, I picked to be last in the division. So I don't expect the Colorado Avalanche to make the playoffs. And I realize Jared Bednar, you know, is changing the team there. And there's a lot to be excited about when you talk about their young players like Nathan MacKinnon and Matt Duchene. And I thought Mikko Rantanen looked good in his first game of the year. But you watch that team and, you know, it's a little bit of a chaotic team in their own zone. I think that, you know, guys like Nikita Zadorov still haven't developed into everyday NHLers, or certainly, you know, he has a lot of room for growth. So I looked at the Avalanche last night, and the Jets are a better team, in my opinion, right now. I think the Avalanche can get better, but certainly, you know, the Jets coming off of a big win in Dallas, they look like the better team. They use their speed better, thought they controlled the neutral zone better. You know, they didn't get any power play goals there, but it turned out all they needed was the one goal. So a very impressive win. It was one of those wins. And, guys, you're playing without Brian Little, without Drew Stafford. You're playing with a shortened bench for all intents and purposes. You know, Chris Thorburn and Mark Stewart, I think, have quietly, you know, added some stability to the lineup. Nobody's talking about it. When they went into the lineup, you know, everybody's saying, well, you know, why are these guys going back into the lineup? Well, the last three games, the Jets have played pretty well too, right? So you got to give those guys credit, you know, playing limited minutes.
Well, you know,
they've done a good job.
You mentioned the minutes, and you mentioned the talking about the Jets bench. You know, Paul Maurice, you know, yesterday, and if this had been last year, this had been 2 years ago, you would have seen the fourth line minutes drop dramatically, you know, throughout the course of the game. Yesterday, he was able to, and he did it the entire game. He was able to roll four lines in terms of his forward group the entire game. I mean, you have Brandon Tanev played the least number of minutes as of a forward at 10 minutes and 27 seconds. That's still not terrible ice time for a fourth line player there. You got a guy like Kyle Connor played 10:47. Then you look up at the forwards. I think Patrick Laine played the most minutes on forward at 21:47. So you can have all 12 of your forwards between sort of 21 and a half minutes and 10 and a half minutes. You're able to roll those four lines pretty well throughout the course of the game. You're able to keep these guys, I mean, not fresh, but to not overwork some of your stars. And that's something that Paul Maurice probably wouldn't have been able to do in previous seasons.
Well, it's yeah, for sure. And if you think about it, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I guarantee you, if you look at a game like you just said, Drew, last year, you would have seen like guys like Thorburn play 4 minutes. You would have seen like the minutes with Lowry would have had probably like a 6 or 7 minute game. Like these guys weren't playing significant minutes when he needed them.
If Andrew Copp had been in the lineup, he would have played fewer minutes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like anybody who was playing like on the fourth line was generally kept, you know, and again, it's a function of being smart with your lineup. Like, you know that you can rely, you know, on a guy like Brandon Tanev to give you what you need in that third period, and you can trust him, and he, you know, brings energy, and he's got the speed, and he's defensively responsible, so you don't have to worry about throwing him out there and thinking like, oh God, what's going to happen if, you know, that shift when Brandon Tanev goes out there. Like, Coach Maurice seems to have a lot of faith in a player like Brandon Tanev, so I wasn't surprised. The other thing I want to talk about is the team finally having some faith in their goaltending. I mean, the importance, I mean, regardless of whether, you know, Dallas is missing some of their key players, which obviously they are, and Colorado isn't necessarily an upper echelon team, I think these the importance of these wins for the goaltending perspective is can't be understated, simply because you needed Connor Hellebuyck to have that game that he did against Dallas. He was very good. And you needed Michael Hutchinson to have the game he did against Colorado last night, simply because, you know, the confidence that goaltenders get. I mean, these guys know they can make the saves, but, you know, when you're letting in four goals a game, especially four goals in a row, it really does, you know, and these are young guys. I mean, Hutchinson's not as young, obviously, as Hellebuyck, but the fact is they're still relatively young goaltenders. And, you know, especially, look, I mean, I was at the Moose game last night, and there was a guy who had a free Pav sign. So you know that the tide was turning a little bit, because fans can only be patient for so long. They see, oh, wow, we're letting in all these goals. Maybe it's the goaltending. Maybe we need to make a change. So I just think from a perspective of the goaltenders, you know, getting the importance of these wins shouldn't be understood.
And getting these wins not by a 5-4 margin, to your point, like they did against Carolina or they did against Toronto, but, you know, even the loss on Tuesday, the goaltending, you know, I guess, you know, Hutchinson would like to have that Sagan goal back, what turned out to be the game-winning goal, but it's only three goals against. And then you go Thursday night against Dallas, it's a goal against, and then last night it's a shutout. So to your point, Dave, you're right. The goaltenders get more confidence by their performance, and the players themselves, the players in front of the goaltenders say, this guy's got our back, because Hutchinson really did make a number of very key saves throughout the course of the third period last night, where the Jets needed him the most, where Colorado was applying extra pressure. So a very important 2 points for the Jets last night in Denver. You know, we were talking about it before the show started. From Colorado's perspective, I thought their quote-unquote best players, all guys who've been very high draft picks, I thought they were average at best last night.
Well, I mean, we talked about it. I remember we talking about it during our season preview show.
Yeah.
And the Colorado Avalanche have some of the best high-end talent in the entire league. When you're talking about Nathan MacKinnon, Matt Duchene, Gabe Landeskog, we talked about Mikko Rantanen. I throw in Jerome McGinley, who's skating on the top line there. But after that, the fall-off, I think, is significant. And, you know, I like a player like Blake Como. And Blake Como, you know, was mixing it up physically. And, you know, he's a good third liner. And so is Carl Soderberg and Rene Bork. But you look at that defense, and to me, that's where it starts. Semyon Varlamov is a good goaltender. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they went out in the offseason, they acquired Patrick Wierkosz and Nikita Zadorov. We talked about his playing on the top pair with Eric Johnson. But, you know, Francois Beauchemin, you know, his best years are behind him. Eric Jelena, you know, he wasn't very good when he played for the Devils. I wasn't very impressed with him last night. So this defense, to me, is probably a bottom five defense in the entire league. It's just not very good. And I think the Jets exposed them at times. Even, you know, when you had the third line out there for the Winnipeg Jets, I think they were exposed. So, you know, I think that, you know, the Avalanche, they're exactly what I expected them to be. And Jared Bednar,
You didn't think that their high-end talent would be better?
Well, I mean,
on paper they are, but, you know, last night's game, I didn't find Duchene or Landeskog. I'm taking a Ginla out of the picture because Jerome's about 100 years old now. But
he's 39.
Okay.
And he had 22 goals last year.
I know, but I'm taking him out of the picture because I don't put him as their upper echelon talent. Their upper echelon talent, from my perspective, is Nathan MacKinnon, Matt Duchene, and Gabriel Landeskog. And the three of them, I didn't think were overwhelmingly impressive last night.
Well, Landeskog had a good scoring chance in the third period there, and I thought MacKinnon was noticeable. It wasn't maybe his best game, but, I mean, these guys, I mean, at the end of the season, these guys are going to have their points. I mean, they're going to be around the 70-point range, I think. But the makeup of this team, Drew, I still think is somewhat flawed. Like, what is the identity of this team? Like, where is this team going? I think that they're trending upwards, and a guy like Mikko Rantanen, you know, is going to help that. He's a top-end prospect. He played with Laine on Team Finland at the World Juniors. But just, you know, I still think they're just an average team. They're an okay team. I don't think that they're going to be a big threat to get into the playoffs this year. I could be wrong. But, you know, looking in last night, you know, the Avalanche off for 5 days, guys. And they came out in the first period. And what did the Jets outshoot them, 10-4 in that first period?
It was something close to that. And the Jets certainly, it was 10-6 in the first period. And the Jets certainly controlled the pace of play in that first period, where the 10 shots, you know, the Jets' first power play was similar to that power play on Thursday night against Dallas, where they really kept the puck in the zone, in the AV zone, for almost a complete 2-minute stretch there.
Drew, if you're off for 5 days, you got to come out with a better performance than that.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to know, like, what the stat is that for teams that have that kind of layoff and then come back and play in the, you know, just the first period, just the perspective, because you would think conventionally that you'd be ready to go. You've practiced enough and you're ready. You know, it's the NHL. You have to be ready to go. But it just seems like when teams have a layoff of that sort of period of time, they're just flat in that, you know, that first period because they just haven't had level of competition.
The question is one of how quickly does the rust wear off? And I think for the Avalanche, it took almost the entire first period for the rust to wear off. Whereas maybe other teams, if they can wear the rust off within the first 5 minutes, it's a different story altogether at that point in time. The Jets, a team flying in on the second half of back-to-back, and it's not an excuse because every team does it in the NHL, but flying in on the back-to-back, the Jets being able to control the play for that entire first period is such a relief to them in that they're not on their heels because they know they're going to be on their heels
at some point
later in the game when the legs get really tired. But to get a full 20 minutes of being the better of the two teams, I think, is such a boost to the Jets.
Got
to
give the Jets full marks. And they've got 3 back-to-backs coming up in November on their road, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this bodes well for them. So, I mean, it doesn't matter if it was 1-0 or 4-3 or whatever. They got the 2 points in a back-to-back situation. That's all that matters.
I think the truth is that there's no Canadian Tires in Colorado, and they needed some CLR to wear that rust off.
Awful. Awful. Hang your head in shame throughout this entire commercial break. When we come back, there's one restricted free agent left. I think you might know his name. We'll talk about him next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Minutes after 9 in the morning, we welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Did Ben Bishop get those teeth fixed?
I'm not sure if he's gone to see Les yet, but he definitely should, as we saw Ben Bishop lose those chiclets, if you will.
I forget who it was, but it might have been Jason Garrison picking up those teeth off of the ice. But that's something that's so unique about hockey. I love it. Like in other sports, if you lost teeth, you know, you might leave the game or whatever. But basically, in hockey, your teammate picks up the teeth. You put your mask back on, you get right at it.
I can't even imagine how much that actually hurts in real life.
Well, the funniest part about it, I was listening to the call, and they're talking about, and they're like, he's not leaving the ice. He's continuing to play.
Yeah. Well, Drew, do you remember what happened to me 3 years ago when I was chewing gum and my tooth came out? That's why I have that gold crown in my mouth.
It's just the same as losing your teeth through a slap shot.
Chewing gum
and losing your teeth.
Well, no, it's the exact same thing.
Well, I played the hockey. I played hockey two days earlier.
The action is losing your tooth. Yes, yeah. I guess is yeah. The impact of
the pain of a puck hitting your mouth.
I was going to say Bishop earned his losing of teeth. You just have terrible dental hygiene. Apparently, is what's happening.
It's true. Since I lost that tooth, I floss every day. I used to floss like probably once a week, but now I floss every single week. And I know that Les Rikus is going to love to hear that.
All right.
Hampus Lindholm, I got to move on. Hampus Lindholm of the Anaheim Ducks.
How often does Hampus Lindholm floss, Drew?
I don't know, Ezzy. He can afford a lot more floss now. He signs a 6-year, $31.5 million contract extension with the Ducks. Of course, he had been a restricted free agent, leaving one restricted free agent left. That, of course, Winnipeg Jets property, Jacob Trouba. Here is the latest on Trouba from the guys at Insider Trading.
Lindholm, we cross him off. That leaves one. One restricted free agent left, Jacob Trouba in Winnipeg. But this is about more than money, clearly, Drakes.
It is, but the Lindholm signing further establishes the market for a player like Jacob Trouba. Now, it's believed that the Winnipeg Jets still are willing to present an offer of 6 years at $5.5 million. But the Trouba cap insists that it's not about the money. It's about the fit. It's about his usage. But Winnipeg determines the fit, either in Winnipeg or elsewhere. And perhaps the market isn't as big as Jacob Trouba would like. Ed, a couple of general managers tell me that there has been Canadian interest directed at Winnipeg, but the belief is that Trouba doesn't see a fit in Canada.
So it's not just Winnipeg that Jacob Trouba doesn't like anymore, according to the guys at Insider Trading. It's apparently the entire country of Canada. So that's, I guess, exciting for us. And here in Winnipeg, we're not the black sheep. It's the entire country that's the black sheep.
Would Jacob Trouba play in the Yukon?
Well, that's Canada. Now, he might play in Alaska, but there's no NHL team there.
He can play for the Alaska Aces.
Home of Scott Gomez.
That is the home. Yes. You're both correct that is the home of Scott Gomez.
And Sarah Palin.
And Sarah Palin. And he could play for the Alaska Aces. I mean, and if they decide to do a reboot of Mystery Alaska, the movie, I guess he could be an extra in it, assuming they filmed that in Alaska.
I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure it was filmed in Minnesota, though, so... Incorrect.
Incorrect. You're getting me on.
Did you like Mystery Alaska?
Didn't do much for me.
I thought it was pretty good.
Okay. In any event, Jacob Trouba now, we are almost...
Trotosaur's giving me the thumbs up.
Okay. We are now a month away from December 1st, more or less. It's almost the end of October.
Yep.
There is no developments on the Trouba front. There seems to be no movement whatsoever on the Trouba front. When do you think that this starts to heat up?
I have no idea, Drew, but... Let's address what Darren Dreger said there.
Okay.
You know, and you could say that, you know, there isn't much new information there, but there really is. He's saying that there is an offer on the table, or maybe not necessarily on the table, but the Jets are willing to still sign Jacob Trouba to a 6-year deal that averages $5.5 million a year, which is what we thought Jacob Trouba would get around, right? If you look at what Hampus Lindholm got, I think his AAV is 5.7.
It's 5.7 this season as a result of it being prorated,
right?
Because he's missed some of the season,
yep.
And then it's 5.2 million for the remainder of the contract.
Okay, so 5.2. I mean,
five and a half is the dollar figure for Jacob Trouba,
right?
In and
right.
around there.
Yes, it's 5.2, 5.5, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that is interesting because he's getting more than Hampus Lindholm and some other really good defensemen. You could argue that Jacob Trouba shouldn't be making that much, but maybe because of the situation the Winnipeg Jets are in, you know, he can ask for more than that. But the more important, I think, piece of this is that if Jacob Trouba is refusing to go to all six other Canadian teams, I mean, that really shrinks the amount of other teams available, right?
Sure.
And so you're talking about a certain amount of teams, and when you talk about certain teams, Dave, that are having salary cap issues, whether it's the LA Kings, you don't think that the LA Kings would love to have Jacob Trouba in their blue line? So I think that, you know, right now, you know, to get back to your original question, your last question there, Drew, I have no idea when this is going to get resolved. Jacob Trouba has demanded a trade. You forget that, right? And I still think that there's an outside shot that the Winnipeg Jets sign Jacob Trouba, whether that's a bridge deal or a multi-year deal, a 5 or 6 year deal. But certainly it looks like right now Kevin Cheveldayoff is standing pat. He wants a young left shot defenseman in return for Jacob Trouba, and he hasn't got that trade yet. So whether or not the Jets are actively seeking out a trade, which it appears that they're not, they're just sitting there and Kevin Cheveldayoff appears to be listening to trade offers, they're going to wait until they get the right trade. And that's what we've said all along. And really, guys, who loses in this situation really is Jacob Trouba and the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets would love to have Jacob Trouba in the lineup. That means Buff doesn't have to play 30 minutes a game. They get one of their top defensemen back. So the entire situation is just unfortunate. But as far as when the situation is resolved, Drew, I don't think it's going to happen within the next week. I think it could be right up until the last minute. And this situation maybe isn't resolved until the last week of November.
Well, all I know, Dave, and I'll let you get in here, is that November 30th is a Wednesday. And NHL This Week will be on air from 10 p.m. till 12 midnight that Wednesday. It's a special later show because of the Moose game.
So, Kurt Overhart, if you're listening, could you please sign Jacob Trouba to a contract on November 30th?
Preferably at around 10:15 p.m. That would be ideal. But anyways, Dave, your thoughts on the latest, or the lack of latest, I guess, in L'Affaire Trouba.
You know what?
Is that French?
A little bit.
It's interesting from the perspective of... I don't know that he said he wouldn't play in all of Canada. I kind of got the impression from the comments from Dreger and McKenzie was that they had spoken to some Canadian GMs that were showing interest, and there wasn't much interest. So my perspective is probably the Oilers, you know, and Trouba's probably thinking that, you know, Edmonton, very similar to Winnipeg, maybe, you know, from that perspective, far from his home base in Michigan and whatnot. And, you know, it appears that maybe he doesn't want to play in Canada. Maybe that is true. I'm not sure. It's interesting. We have a poll on illegalcurve.com right now. Go and vote as to what people think, you know, how it will resolve itself. And it's evenly split between sits out of the season and is re-signed by the Jets. Not a lot of people think he's going to be traded. So, which I think is interesting. I think a lot of people believe that if something's going to happen, it's going to be that, you know, shovel, because realistically, why hasn't a trade happened already, right? Like they've had months where it was quiet. Now they're, you know, now the gun is against Cheveldale's head in the sense that, you know, other GMs know he needs to make this trade. It's not, it's a lot better obviously when you can make a trade when it's not out there that you need to make that trade. So a lot of, unless he gets what he wants, and we know that, you know, Gary's reported it, a lot of people reported that Cheveldayoff is prepared to sit on his hands and let Trouba sit in Michigan. And obviously it's a lot better for the Jets GM if the team is winning. You know what I mean? Like, let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. Fans are going to be beside themselves when you have a stud like Jacob Trouba sitting at home twiddling his thumbs and not playing on your blue line, whether it's right side, left side, and especially because there is a proportion of the fan base who wants to see Trouba playing where Myers is right now in that second pairing right side. But regardless, you know, we know the coach Maurice wants him on the left side where Josh Morrissey is with Bufflin. But again, like I said, the fan base right now, I think, especially if the team can go on a bit of a winning streak, is going to be completely fine with whatever the Jets GM is prepared to do at that point. I think if the Jets went on an extended losing streak, you would see fans more up in arms.
Michael Trakos of the National Post joins us next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're live on TSN 1290. Nine 9:30 in the morning, you're listening to TSN 1290's coverage of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Gensburg, and Dave Minuk with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Trakos. You can read Michael's work at thenationalpost.com. He's also available in your favorite Post Media newspaper. Michael, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
How you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, Michael. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
That's
pretty good.
Glad to hear
some Winnipeg weather out here in Toronto. It's starting to snow.
Well, you know, we have not had a drop of snow at all yet here, you know, this winter or this fall, because it's not yet winter, of course. But everywhere to the west of us, in Alberta, Saskatchewan, everywhere to the east of us, in Ontario, seems like it's bad weather. You know what we always say, it's always sunny in Winnipeg.
You guys are lucky now. Don't worry, it's coming. It's coming for you guys.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Michael, if you want Drew's full weather report, you can just follow him on Twitter, at ICDrew, and he can tell you what's happening in the Atlantic provinces as well.
There you go. I don't even need Siri anymore. I just call him Drew.
That's all you. I'm a one-stop shop for all your weather needs. Michael, good morning, and again, thank you for joining us. Goaltending. It's a bit of a problem among the Canadian NHL franchises. Things are getting a little bit better here in Winnipeg, given that Hutchinson had the shutout last night and Hellebuyck had the one goal against on Thursday night. Between Frederik Andersen in Toronto and Brian Elliott in Calgary, which one are you more surprised about with their early season struggles?
Probably Elliott. You know what? That seems to be resolving itself already with his last few starts. With Andersen, it's a bad team, so I almost expected him to be in a little tougher road. But I think last year when we were talking about Calgary, everyone was saying if they had just even average goaltending, that team was probably closer to a playoff team than they probably ended up being. So to get a guy that has proven it in St. Louis and to go to a team like Calgary where you've got all the pieces there, all you need is a guy to stop the puck, that was a little bit more surprising. But you know what? It's such a small sample size. I think in both cities, you're going to get better goaltending. With Toronto, we even started seeing in the last game where Andersen really kind of shored up that goaltending, especially in the third period. So I think it's one of those things when you go to a new team, there's going to be adjustments. There's going to be different styles in terms of how they're playing in front of you and maybe how the coach wants you to front the puck. So maybe we're seeing a bit of that, but you know what? Both cities desperately need their goaltender to be better. And if you're going to, I don't know if Toronto's necessarily in the same boat where they're looking playoffs, but if you're Calgary, you desperately need Brian Elliott to maybe not save games for you, but you need him to be at least good enough where he's keeping you in games. And if he can do that, I think both teams are going to be in a good position. I think Calgary's a playoff team if they got good goaltending.
You know, Michael, the Jets recently played the Leafs in Winnipeg, as you know, and watching that game, the Leafs took the lead, and of course the Jets came back with Line A getting the hat trick. Looking at the Leafs defense in their own zone, you know, I'm a big fan of Morgan Rielly, but looking at guys like Nikita Zaitsev and Connor Carrick, they were a little bit of a tire fire in their own zone. Are you a little bit surprised at how much this defensive group has struggled so far?
Not really, because the guys you mentioned, like Connor Carrick, is basically in his second or third season, depending on how you want to view that. Nikita Zaitsev, while he's got some experience in the KHL, he's a rookie in the NHL, so first time going to a smaller ice surface. You're talking about Morgan Rielly as basically your best defenseman of the group, and yet he's still only, what, 23 years old. So they're going to be long nights. This is a team where there's a lot of excitement with how the youth are playing, but you know, I think it's easier to be a young forward where all you're really tasked with is offensive hockey versus if you've got a young defense, you're going to have nights like the Leafs have had. And I think that's partly due to why Frederik Andersen has struggled so badly, is that in front of him, he's just got a lot of guys who are playing almost in over their head in terms of the minutes and what's being asked of them. So guys like Matt Hunwick, Roman Polak, they haven't been any better. If anything, though, those are your worst culprits, and those are the guys who are supposedly your veterans, the guys who are seasoned pros in the NHL. So it's going to be a long season for the Leafs unless they can upgrade the defense. And you know, I think part of what they're trying to do this year is really get those young guys some minutes and some experience so that next year or year after, Nikita Zaitsev becomes your number two defenseman. Connor Carrick is a legit number three. So it will be interesting to see what the Leafs can do in terms of the trade deadline. I know Jacob Trouba is a guy they'd love to have. At the same time, if you're Winnipeg, the guy that you're probably would like to have in a Jacob Trouba trade is Morgan Rielly. So it doesn't really work out that way. But yeah, the Leafs need to either get better in a hurry or make a trade, and probably neither one's going to happen.
Michael, earlier this week you wrote about the growing pains that the Leafs will experience as they have younger players coming into the lineup, and you know, we here in Winnipeg see the Jets, who have a younger team. Is this becoming a younger NHL?
Oh, for sure. And it's not just those teams. Like, you look at Edmonton, Calgary with who their young guys are. Arizona basically is going forward with one of the youngest teams in the NHL. So it's interesting because I think that's due in part to why we're seeing so many scoring, or why scoring is up right now. The fact that it's all these young players, and you know what? While how exciting they are, they're making a ton of mistakes. So you're seeing that offense, but you're also seeing the kind of riverboat, kind of gambler type hockey. And it's exciting for fans, but I think for coaches, you're probably going, geez, we're really giving up the kind of hockey that we don't want to play right now. So it'll be interesting to see how it works. With Winnipeg, you know, they've got, like, probably more veterans there that can kind of guide the Patrick Laines and the Mark Scheifele's, where in Toronto, your best players are your young players, and you don't have those kind of seasoned pros kind of leading the way. I know JVR is supposed to do that, but when you look at his line, it's still being carried by Mitch Marner.
Michael Tracos of the National Post is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Leafs, discussing goaltending throughout the NHL. Michael, what did you make of Mike Babcock's reaction to yet another question about the Leafs' goaltending and Anderson's struggles when he sort of, I mean, for lack of a better word, lashed out about it?
Yeah, you know what? I think Babcock is at the point now where he knows the goaltending has been shaky, but he also knows we're only, what, 6-7 games into the season? So there's no real option number two for Toronto. This isn't a scenario where you had James Reimer or Jonathan Bernier and you could kind of flip-flop between the two. It's either, like, you've made your bed with Frederik Andersen. A 5-year, $25 million contract tells the hockey world that you've already anointed him as your number one goalie, and there's no way that Jonas Enroth steals the net away from him, because this is a guy that's only on a 1-year contract as a backup. So, you know, Babcock maybe showed his first sense of frustration with the media at that moment, but at the same time, I think it was almost an unfair question when you're saying, okay, well, atone for all the mistakes that the organization has made in net for the last 20 years. Well, you know, Mike Babcock doesn't have to do that. That's like asking, like, Dave Haxtell in Philadelphia to atone for all the mistakes that Philadelphia's Flyers have had in net. Like, it's just, it's kind of unfair. Like, Babcock's been there for 2 years. Last year, they got spotty goaltending from Reimer and Bernier. The year before, you know, he's in Detroit. He doesn't care about that kind of stuff. So to say it's a Toronto problem and that once a goalie gets here, he just forgets how to stop the puck because he's in the big city, it's kind of nonsense. So, you know what? This team's going to get better all around. Goaltending is a part of it. And I think once you get a better defense and you get a more competitive forward lineup, not just offensively but defensively, you're going to see better results everywhere.
Mike, you got a lot of attention on Twitter on Wednesday, and I was texting you about it when I asked you to come on the show. Frankie Corrado still hasn't got into the Leafs lineup. He, of course, was claimed off of waivers from the Vancouver Canucks last year. Why do you think Corrado hasn't got into the lineup for the Leafs, considering that the defense has struggled?
Yeah, that's a simple answer. I think Mike Babcock just doesn't like the kid. And not like on a personal level. I just think he doesn't trust him. He doesn't know how to use him. He doesn't think he can play in the NHL. And it's one of those situations where the Leafs management grabs this kid off waivers from Vancouver a year ago, presents him to Mike Babcock, and based on what he's seen in practice, he's basically telling management with his usage that Frankie Corrado has no place with the Leafs. Thing is, you can't drop him down to the minors because you expose him to waivers. So, if you're Frankie Corrado, you're in a tough spot right now because you have a coach that doesn't want to play you, but then you've got a management team that doesn't want to release you because they still think that down the road, if there are injuries or trades, that they might actually have to use you. So it's a tough position to be in. I've talked to his agent. Obviously, it's an unhappy camp right now. It's a frustrated camp because if you're not going to play the kid, and we're talking about a 23-year-old, I think a lot of people forget. Just because we keep hearing his name for years, and whether it's in Vancouver or Toronto now, he's only 23 years old. 23-year-olds need to play hockey. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Whether it's in the NHL, the AHL, or over in Europe, they need to play hockey so they can develop. And this is a kid that hasn't even begun to realize his potential, and it's no fault to anyone, but or no fault to his. It's just the fact that, you know what, like Vancouver did the right thing. They exposed him to waivers. They're going to put him down to the minors. Let him develop there. You know, Toronto, like any other team, could have went to grab him. You thought, okay, this is a team that actually wants to use him. And the fact that they grabbed them to do the same thing that Vancouver was doing is really unfortunate. I wish a rule could be put in place in the sense that if you're not going to use a kid under the age of 25, that somehow they can buy themselves the rights and become free agents again. But such as it is, he's a real victim of the kind of salary cap world.
You know, Michael, going back 10 days, the buzz in the city was huge for the Matthews versus Line A matchup. And, of course, it probably stood up to the billing. And, unfortunately, they won't play in Toronto until, I think, sometime end of February. What was the buzz like in Toronto about that first meeting?
I think it was pretty big. I don't think anyone's kind of was looking at that matchup going, okay, is Patrick Laine going to make me think twice that the Leafs should have picked him as the number one pick? Because you know, both guys are different players. In Matthews, I think every Toronto Maple Leaf fan has to be happy that the team finally has a number one center for the first time since Matt Sundin. So regardless of what Laine did, it was fantastic. I actually think he's a perfect player for Winnipeg in the sense that I think they could have used that big, strong winger and then they got the guy that they wanted. So but I don't think it made any Leaf fan think twice, like, oh, geez, did we pick the wrong guy? Both guys are going to be outstanding players. I think it's going to be a real fun kind of rookie race when we're looking at them. And I think all we're missing right now, boys, is just the hate. I don't know if these guys actually hate each other. We want them to develop this rivalry a la Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, where they're going at each other maybe after whistles, and you've got that tete-a-tete between the two young faces in the NHL. But I don't know if it's there yet. I'm hoping somehow we can manufacture it and the Line A can maybe take a swing at Matthews the next time they play or something, because right now all you've got is just two outstanding players, but it'd be nice if maybe they dropped the gloves or did something. You know what I mean?
Hard to develop hate when you only play each other twice a year, of course.
Well, that's what the Stanley Cup Finals for.
Then I think they would learn how to hate each other. Last question for you, Michael. Obviously, all the talks about Austin Matthews. Two other top 10 picks on the Leafs roster, William Nylander and Mitch Marner. From your perspective, which one has been more impressive?
You know what? Mitch Marner doesn't have the points that Nylander or Matthews has. But look at his scoring chances, and I think he's probably he probably has more scoring chances than both guys combined. Mitch Marner has been outstanding for the Leafs. There's no talk of sending him back to junior. If anything, he's the guy that's kind of running that second line with Tyler Bozak and James Van Riemsdyk. Just a tremendous playmaker, and he's got wheels to burn. It's funny because the one thing that stood out for Mike Babcock when you talk about Marner is his defensive play, and that was the one kind of thing that you're always iffy about going into the season is, can this kid who looks like Johnny Gaudreau or Patrick Kane, can he actually be a two-way guy and not burn you defensively? Well, if anything, Mitch Marner's strength right now in terms of turning over pucks and grabbing loose pucks and really being strong defensively, that's been what's kind of keeping him in the lineup right now. So it's a fabulous kind of trio that they've got in terms of high-flying kind of top-end rookies. And don't be surprised if Mitch Marner ends up with the most points out of the three.
We look forward to tracking the impressive young forwards of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael Tracos is with the National Post. He's with the Post Media Network. Michael, always appreciate your time, good friend.
All right, thanks, guys.
Have a good weekend. You too, Michael. Let's head to break. When we come back, we look forward to the month of November and discuss the Winnipeg Jets schedule. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we now look ahead.
When I look into your eyes.
Wow, Ezzy.
Wow. Hi.
I'm stunned. Like, we might have to just let music play for a little bit.
A little bit there. Anyways, we're going to talk about the month of November for the Winnipeg Jets.
Let's go do some karaoke tonight, Drew.
What do they call it? Carpool karaoke? Studio karaoke right now?
Yeah, nobody wants to hear Ezzy singing. I think that's clear. But we're going to talk
about. I've been told I have an angelic voice.
An angelic voice. Something like that. Anyways, we're going to talk about the Jets' upcoming month of November as they finish off their October schedule tomorrow afternoon against the Buffalo Sabres. Should mention this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know what, Drew? I'll go do karaoke with Frank and Mauro because I know that those guys love Gunners. So,
did you just call Guns N' Roses Gunner?
Yeah, Gunners. That's what they're called. See, again, Drew, you know, you're more familiar with the Frank Sinatra era in the 1940s and 50s. But if you ask Sean Asor, you know, we like Guns N' Roses. That was the music of our generation.
For the record, the first band I ever saw was Guns N' Roses at the old Winnipeg Arena in 1991 or 92. But other than that, you're completely right.
We were 40 years old at the time. But
the month of November for the Winnipeg Jets, the busiest month on the calendar.
It's a busy month.
They have 16 games in the month of November, so 16 games in the 30 days that make up the month of November. Six of them are at home. 10 of them are on the road. They have six games versus Central Division rivals, including a home-and-home with Nashville that's going to take place towards the end of the month, the 25th and the 27th. They have eight games versus the Eastern Conference, including a home-and-home next week with the perennial President's Trophy contending Washington Capitals. They have two games versus the Pacific Division at Arizona and home to Los Angeles. And as we mentioned earlier, they have three sets of back-to-backs next Thursday, Friday, Washington and Detroit. 2 weeks from then, Thursday at Arizona, Friday again at Colorado. And then they have a Saturday at Boston and a Sunday at Carolina. This month of November, is this the make-or-break month for the Winnipeg Jets for this season? If they... You know, we hear so much about U.S. Thanksgiving, and if you're not in a playoff spot by U.S. Thanksgiving, it's so difficult to get back into it. Each year, the numbers bear that out.
Yep.
So is this next, you know, 16, 17 games, including Sunday's game, is this a make-or-break portion of the Winnipeg Jets' 2016-17 season?
Yes, it absolutely is, Drew. And I went back and I looked at the month of November last year, and it was actually very similar for the Winnipeg Jets as far as how many games they had and the percentage of those games that were on the road. The Jets had 14 games in November 2015, and the Jets only won four of those games. I think the record was 4-9-1, unless I'm mistaken, but I remember that they only won four games in November. And sure, there's more games in this month of November 2016, but similar in the sense that it's not going to be easy. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned six of those games are against Central Division teams, including that home-and-home with Nashville, but you've got the games against Washington to start the month. Those aren't going to be easy. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's those three sets of back-to-back games, and those back-to-back games that are all on the road there. So you're talking about starting off with Washington and Detroit the first week of November, and then you've got Arizona and Colorado, and then the one that could be the most difficult because it's on the East Coast, Boston and Carolina, later in the month. But certainly the Jets won last night, and they've proven that they can win back-to-back games, maybe not both away, but certainly, you know, short period of time between playing in Winnipeg and then getting on a plane and going to play in Denver. So it's going to be a very tough schedule. And, you know, the Jets are definitely up to the challenge, guys. I mean, this is a young team. You know, the Jets have played a lot of hockey games at various levels. And when you're talking about, you know, junior hockey, especially guys that have played in the Canadian Hockey League, they're used to playing a lot of games in a short period of time. So, yeah, this will be a make or break time for the Jets. And when you're talking about the early part of that month, you're talking about playing six teams in a row that were playoff teams last year.
Two against Washington, Detroit, the Rangers, Dallas. Those
right.
are your, yeah.
Right. So five, sorry.
Five.
But, you know, it's not going to be an easy schedule. So, I mean, if the Jets, let's look at it this way, guys. If the Jets can win 9 or 10 games of these 16, I mean, they're really going to set themselves up nicely for December. But if you only win 4 games or 5 games like you did last year, Dave, I mean, you're going to have a big problem because you're going to put yourself behind the eight ball early on in the season.
And, you know, Coach Maurice was talking about the challenge of the schedule and how they've got, you know, they won't be having a lot of practices coming up in the next, you know, in the near term simply because of the number of games and, you know, what how he'd like to break it down in terms of giving his team enough time to recover from games and rest and that
sure.
and that sort of thing.
And they have to have their 4 mandated off days in the course of, which can't be travel days in
right.
the course of, in the course of the month. So, I mean, there really isn't a lot of time at all for practice.
Well, last night the team normally would return home from that game. They'd practice today in Winnipeg and they'd get ready for tomorrow's game because it's an afternoon game, whereas they chose instead to stay in Colorado last night, you know, travel back to Winnipeg today, mm-hmm. and then, so meaning obviously they're not skating, not practicing, and then they're going to obviously play an afternoon game tomorrow against Buffalo. So it's definitely a different, there's going to be challenges to this scheduling. However, having said that, I mean, an interesting comment from the coach was how these are young guys and they really don't know any different. Whereas, like, you know, guys like Wheeler, Bufflin, you know, they're more regimented. They're scheduled guys. They know what an NHL schedule looks like. Guys like Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, they don't know any different. They don't know what an NHL season looks like. So for them, not practicing isn't necessarily out of character, isn't out of their rhythm. So it may not impact them too negatively. As an aside, the one thing, there's two other things that I want to say. The one thing, I do like these home and homes. I really do. I think they're kind of neat. I think they add an interesting element to, especially when it's
familiarity again, breeds rivalry.
Well,
so the NHL should schedule more home and homes
right.
because these guys will then dislike each other and then it'll translate to the ice and then there'll be a feud or whatever.
Well, I mean, and we talked about it with the last thing with Michael Tracos. Like, it's a shame that, you know, Laine and Matthews play. Look, if you're only going to play them twice, wouldn't it be neat if you played them, you know, on that, and then not have to wait till February to have that rematch? Is it the same? Whereas, you know, here you play Washington and Winnipeg, and then you go back to Washington,
mm-hmm.
or is it the other way around?
No, it's Washington, home to Washington,
home to Washington,
then at Washington.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't know. I just like that. And again, you know, I mean, the other home and home is Nashville, which is obviously a team that the Jets are going to be battling with. So that one will have even more meaning than the Nashville game. And the
just
other
like
thing,
the Dallas one did. I mean, there was, you know, after Tuesday's, you know, at the end of Tuesday's game in Dallas, there certainly was some hard feelings on the ice between the two teams. It seems like that dissipated by the time the Thursday rematch came along because we saw the rock, paper, scissor contest between Scheifele and Sagan, which is all good and fun. But, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, so play each other more often and in closer time frames, and you're going to develop a rivalry.
And to Ezzie's point, and I think the key is if the Jets could reel off that sort of record where you pick up 9 or 10 or 11 wins in November – why that is so significant is because you're doing it without Brian Little, who, as we now know, will be out till at least the end of November.
Sure.
And when you lose a player like Brian Little, I mean, it just cannot be understated. He's so important to what, you know, everything he does you know, and he's often a guy who gets kind of overlooked by a lot of people because he just does everything well, but he's not like flashy. So he doesn't, you don't think, oh wow, but you know, his face-off wins, just his defensive responsibility, he's just a smart guy on the ice. So if the Jets can have a plus record in the month of November without a top, you know, a second line center, if you want, well, behind Mark Scheifele, that's huge, because then when you get Brian Little back, assuming he's ready to go end of November into December, and you put yourself into that sort of position, then really it just only lends itself to showing that this team can do even more, because you're going to have, you know, obviously the line shuffled down, so you'll have more depth in the, you know, in the organization or on the team. So I think if the team can actually do what Ez is suggesting in November, which obviously is a tall task, it really does set them up well for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well said there, Dave. You know, it is, it's so important, I think, for this young team to get off to a good start in the month of November. Keep it going. You know, a game you should win at home against Buffalo tomorrow, as the Sabres are coming in on the second half of back-to-back. The Sabres play this afternoon at home in Buffalo, then fly to Winnipeg for tomorrow afternoon's game. You know, you get the momentum going, and you know, because they're such a young team, and you know, the ups and downs of the season, they might not be able to handle them quite like a veteran team would. So it's important to keep the good feelings going as you get into this crucial month of November that the Jets are about to embark on, with those two very difficult games, home to Washington and then at Washington.
Yeah, and it's not going to be easy, guys. I mean, you know, we're talking about, ideally, the Jets want to win probably a minimum 9 or 10 of these 16 games to really feel like this month was a success. Heck, they'd probably tell you that they'd want to win 13 or 14 games, right? But that's easier said than done. So I think that when you look at the schedule, and, you know, to play devil's advocate, a couple of years ago, the year the Jets made the playoffs, November was really the month that they went on the road and they went into buildings like the United Center, yeah, and they stole 2 points. So, I mean, the Jets have the ability to do it. They have a very talented group here. I think they've proven that with these 2 wins in a row over Dallas and Colorado. So it's going to be tough, but it's certainly going to be, when you look back on the season, November is going to be one of those months, even though it doesn't necessarily make or break the season, you're certainly going to look at it and you're going to say, well, if it went really good, that was kind of something that they built momentum on. And if it went really bad, you can say, well, they never recovered.
Exactly right. Quickly, before we head to break, this is from Thursday and TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Saravelli. The Jets will reel off 19 games over the next 33 days. They will change time zones 10 times, cross the border 8 times, and fly roughly 26,585 kilometers. Along the way, they'll enjoy 2 consecutive off days just once and play 4 sets of back-to-back contests, the first, of course, being this past Thursday and Friday. We'll keep an eye. It'll be a very important month of November for the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back, Amanda Stein from our sister station, TSN 690 in Montreal, joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio here. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Montreal, and we're pleased to welcome to the program Amanda Stein from our sister station, TSN 690. Amanda is the Habs NHL reporter. She's also the post-game show co-host on TSN 690. Amanda, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me again.
Our pleasure, Amanda. Now, before we get into the Habs, I don't know if you're aware, but the Winnipeg Jets now have 2 mascots. So when's the next time we're going to be seeing you in Winnipeg?
Never. Do they really have 2 mascots?
They, for the Heritage Classic, they brought back the old Jets 1.0 mascot, Benny. So they now have Benny on occasion and Mickey Moose, who's the regular mascot. And my word on the street is they've been in touch with Yuppie, and they're going to be conspiring against you.
That seems really necessary. Yeah, that's one thing I'm famous for, is my eternal fear of mascots, and I can assure you I will not be visiting Winnipeg if there are 2 lurking around.
Amanda, Drew was actually the guy that was in the Benny mascot costume. He was walking around.
I have no doubt at all.
Okay, Amanda, we obviously brought you on to talk about the Habs, off to a tremendous start this season, 7-0-1, just as we saw last year. Of course, the difference is the hope that Carey Price stays healthy this year. you know, we'll talk about Carey Price, but we've got to start with Shea Weber because he was the big addition in the offseason. PK Subban obviously leaving town. How impressive has Shea Weber's performance been thus far on the Canadiens' blue line?
It's been quite remarkable. And one thing I always try and preface when talking about Shea Weber is it doesn't mean, you know, just saying nice things about Weber means you're saying bad things about PK, because that's sort of the mantra that we get here in Montreal. But Shea Weber has been absolutely a rock for this team to start the year, and not just on the ice, but also you can sort of tell that vibe in the locker room as well with him and that leadership quality that they were really looking from him. But one of the things I really did notice, because, you know, when he played for Nashville, he would only be here once a year, and you could appreciate what he was able to do. But to see him be able to perform like that night in, night out, he's not the fastest guy, but he's, you know, he's so smart that he makes up for, you know, what maybe he lacks in foot speed with his smarts. And that shot that he has from the point to, you know, again, you can appreciate it in a one-game atmosphere, but then to see it night in, night out like that, and its effectiveness, I've never seen a more accurate fast shot in my entire life.
You know, Amanda, you look at the Montreal Canadiens right now, first overall in the NHL, 7-0-1. But Montreal Canadiens, you know, they have short memories, and they remember last year when the Canadiens started off 9-0. And you look at some of the teams that the Canadiens have beat here, and there are some good teams within those first eight games. Is there anything to be concerned about? Because right now everything looks pretty good. You're getting a lot of balanced scoring. Defense looks pretty good. Carey Price is back from injury. Aside from, you know, what happened last year with the injury to Carey Price, is there anything to be concerned about if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan?
I mean, it's hard to nitpick at this point because of the record that they have and how well they've been doing. But I think one of the areas of concern, and I talked about it with Michel Therrien over the last week or so, and it's we've seen an improvement over the last week, is their special teams, especially on the power play. It seemed that they were really struggling. They were, you know, they brought in Kirk Muller this offseason to really, you know, try and nail down the power play. That's been a bit of a plague for them the last couple of years. It's really been their Achilles heel. And at the beginning of the year, it was a lot of perimeter play. And I think just trying to figure out, I say the beginning of the year, like the season's been on for so long. But at first, I think they were just sort of feeling out the new structure. And in the last couple of games, they've been able to get a couple power play goals. So if we're really, like, you know, digging deep as to what needs to sort of be really worked on, I would say it was special teams. And you can tell that the coaching staff is really aware of that, because in a lot of their practices leading up to the Lightning game on Thursday and, of course, Wednesday in Long Island, or rather Brooklyn, they were really focusing on those special teams. But again, it's hard, right? When your team is doing so well, you're undefeated in regulation, you're the best team in the league in that aspect, it's hard to sort of start nitpicking at it.
So Amanda, you know, we know most fan bases are pretty intense, and Montreal is probably the greatest, you know, example of that in the league. Mm-hmm. Are expectations that this team is going to win a Stanley Cup, at least, if not this year, by next year?
I think the hope is, and I think I say that in terms of hope because, you know, ask me that question this time last year, the answer would have been yes, they're going to win it this year. But I think, what, you know, it was a very sobering experience for the entire fan base and, you know, for media and for the team itself, what they went through last year, how well they started and how they collapsed, and that was it. And they had one of the worst finishes, if not the worst finish in their franchise history. So I think it was a very sobering experience for everybody, especially because of how intense things can get here and how you really, you know, a lot of the fans really experience the highs very high and the lows very low. I think there's a bit of an understanding now to really, you know, to use a hockey cliche, take it one game at a time. But at the same point, you know, you've got realistic fans who know that the time is now, because you've got Carey Price on a good contract. You've got Max Pacioretty for barely nothing. You have those contracts coming up in the next 2 years that need to be taken care of. And it's not, you know, there's no guarantee that you'll be able to retain this core the way they are. So I think the hope is, and the expectation is, that within the next 2 years, they'll be able to put it together. And if Carey Price can stay healthy, I don't see why that's not a possibility.
Amanda Stein is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Amanda covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690, our sister station in Montreal. Amanda, if at the beginning of the year, in the offseason, if I told you that the fans at the Bell Center would be chanting Radu, Radu for Alex Radulov, would you say that I was nuts, or would you say that I was certifiably nuts?
Oh, probably certifiably nuts, let's say. But, you know, he's the type of guy, like, he's the type of hockey players that, like, fans here eat up. He's, you know, I hate using comparisons, but he almost has that Alex Kovalev feel to him, you know, with, like, end-to-end rushes and just sort of these magic hands that he has. But he has been just exactly what the Canadians have needed. Over the last couple of years, everyone's talking about, you know, they need that number one center. They need, which they have also in Alex Galchenyuk, but they need that extra scoring punch. And he's able to do it. And, you know, the worry really was is after being away for the league for 7 years, how is he going to adjust? Why is he coming back? Is it realistic to think that he can perform, you know, at 30 years old at the same level that he left when he left Nashville the second time? And he's been nothing but a delight. He's been wonderful to deal with as a media member. He's, you know, he speaks a little bit of French, you know, when he can to the crowd. And he's just, I mean, what we're seeing in terms of his talent is bar none. You know, you have to think that Marc Bergevin had the steal of July 1st.
Amanda, Mikhail Sergachev was drafted 9th overall in Buffalo, and he's got into 3 games, and many Montreal Canadiens observers were hoping that Mikhail Sergachev was going to be able to step right into the lineup and play a full season. But are you expecting that he is going to get sent back to Windsor of the OHL?
I think it looks that way. I think they might take their time with that. He's only played 3 games so far, and you know most of those games have been at home. It's, you know, one of those precarious situations where, do they want to send him back? Probably not. But because of the, you know, just like the situation where he has to go back to junior, and once you send him down, that's it, right? You can't call him up for the rest of the year. You don't have access to him. So I think they're in this position where they wish they could almost send him to St. John's and get that type of experience, because he might be too good now for junior, but not quite there for the NHL yet. And it's hard. As an 18-year-old defenseman, it's hard to bring someone along like that, especially on a team that's doing really well. And I mean that by, you don't want to tinker too much with your lineup. And Michel Therrien hasn't always been, you know, known for giving young players a chance, especially if they make a mistake or two. But he's an impressive kid. He really is. Like, when we've seen him play, he makes smart decisions. The thing that he's told me when I've asked him, you know, what he's struggling with, what he's trying to figure out, and for him, it's really the speed of the game. And talking about not just the foot speed of the game, but just how quickly and how impressed he is with how quick everyone else on the ice can make decisions. So I think it's definitely going to be a work in progress. I think we're going to see great things from him, but I don't imagine that he'll finish the year here.
Amanda Stein, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Amanda covers the Habs for TSN 690 in Montreal. Amanda, you know, obviously the offseason was about Shea Weber coming into the Habs fold. How has his presence changed life for Max Pacioretty and Brendan Gallagher and Thomas Plekanec and many of the former, quote-unquote, or I guess current still, leadership team behind the Habs?
I think because he's a bit of a quieter guy, or I shouldn't say a bit, he is a very quiet guy, especially when compared to PK, there's not that element of distraction in terms of your leadership core. I don't think anyone would ever admit, nor have they, that leadership was a problem, and that the leadership group that they had, you know, had a difference of opinions. But I think on the outside, it was very obvious that something was really up. I mean, Shea Weber is just a calming effect, not just on the ice, but in the locker room, and you can see how much they respect him. And if you think about when he was traded to Montreal, you have a guy like Jonathan Toews in Chicago who never tweets anything really other than like his charity work. And that's great that he does that. But the second that, you know, Shea Weber gets traded, it was almost like, good riddance, Shea. I don't have to, you know, face you anymore. And that's just how highly respected he is. And that sort of, that carries into the locker room. He doesn't really say much. He's not a great interview, but he gives them a presence on the ice. He gives them flexibility on the ice. And also, I think one of the main things, and maybe it's less leadership-wise, but more so on the ice, is that he gives Andrei Markov a bit of a break and a bit, like, less pressure on Andrei Markov to play those big minutes, which I think is important. And I just like the way he talks to the refs. He just holds himself with, like, such composure. I think it's really important to have that, especially in a market like this that can be really volatile.
Okay, so Amanda, now that we've got all the serious questions yes. out of the way, I follow you on Twitter, and probably one of my favorite segments that you have going on Twitter right now is hashtag Convos with Dad. So the big question is, have you had a conversation with Dad yet this morning?
Not this morning. He's up at the cottage, so he's probably too busy doing stuff around the house. But yeah, this is a new segment that I've sort of started, you know, posting on my Twitter feed. I used to tell a lot of my colleagues about like funny things my dad would say to me because he's a man of like very, very few words, or he just does really weird things. And they told me I should start posting this. So the other day, I think you saw, like, he sent me like a completely unsolicited email about like the fact that he signed me up for like an email chain that will send me an email once a week on how to deal with like life's problems. You know, like that's like, my dad. He's very weird like that. He does really weird things. And then the other day I co-hosted a show on TSN 690 called The Habs Hot Topic last Saturday afternoon. And my dad called me like 3 seconds after I got off the air. And he's like, hey, I just heard you on the radio. You sounded so great. I'm so proud of you. And I was like, well, okay, thanks, Dad. Like, it's really nice to hear, but I have been on the radio for like 6 years. And like, I could tell that like, I'm pretty sure, guys, it was like the first time he ever heard me. Which I thought was funny, and then I followed that up with, okay, well, I'll see you at dinner tonight, which was at his house. And then he follows that up with, you're invited? I was like, yes, I am invited. My stepmom, his wife, called me and invited me for dinner at his own house, which I thought was funny. So he's a funny guy. He has, like, these one-liners that I don't think he knows, like, how funny he truly is. So it's a new thing I've started, along with my handwriting. You'll get a glimpse into my family life with Convos with Dad.
It's certainly something worth following. You can follow Amanda on Twitter, at Amanda C. Stein. Amanda, thanks for joining us this morning. Always appreciate your time.
No problem, guys. I just want to let you know that I had a St. Viator bagel for breakfast.
Oh,
I know we always talk bagels.
You stab us in our hearts by not sending us these bagels and telling us that you're having one.
No, why don't we do? We should do like a deli swap. Like Amanda should send us some Schwartz's, and we'll send her some Bernstein's.
It sounds like a play. Hey, Amanda, you know we have our own sandwich at Bernstein's Deli here in Winnipeg.
I did not know that.
The Illegal Curve sandwich.
Oh, I like that. What's in that?
Well, it's not kosher. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah, okay, all right. I don't keep kosher. Don't
okay.
worry about it.
It's chicken schnitzel. It's chicken schnitzel. It's
yum.
Salami.
It's, there goes the kosher.
Yeah, it's fried onion. It's cheddar cheese, and it's honey mustard on toasted rye bread.
Wow. First of all, I love rye. I think I like everything in that sandwich. That sounds amazing. Send that to me.
We'll send that to you if you send us some bagels.
Deal. You got it.
All right, Amanda. Thank you. Well, it's a deal. It's all coming up soon. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks a lot, Amanda.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
It's head to break. When we come back, we look at the Jets and the Sabres ahead of tomorrow afternoon's matchup here at MTS Center. 20 minutes past 10 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Amanda Stein in Montreal for joining us to talk about the Habs. And Michael Tracos before was on in the first hour to talk about the Leafs and goaltending throughout the NHL. Still to come on the program, Mike Harrington on the Sabres and Joe Beninati on the Washington Capitals. This segment of the show, it's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I was at Bernstein's yesterday picking up some dinner for myself and the family, and the big screen TVs were all up on display. A great place to watch the game. If you're looking for a place that's got some cold brewskis, some Illegal Curve sandwiches, full audio, a great place to check out the game is at Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
Drew, has Aaron had an Illegal Curve sandwich yet?
She's only 13 months, so it's not quite at that point, but we've given her all the elements of an Illegal Curve sandwich, just not in one sandwich form yet. She's had rye bread. I don't know if she's had onion, but she's had salami and she's had some chicken schnitzel, and so she's getting, and she's had cheddar cheese, so she's getting close. It's a deconstructed Illegal Curve sandwich is what she's had.
By the way, thank you for letting me use your baby Bjorn for my costume tonight. I really appreciate it.
May God have mercy on all of our souls.
Yeah, I'm going as Alan from The Hangover.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. So I'm going to have...
You don't get a cease and desist restraining order between now and about 7 o'clock this evening.
Yeah, no, so I appreciate you lending that to me, because without it, I really couldn't pull off the costume.
The question is, whose baby are you using?
No, it's just like it's a doll.
Oh, okay. That's good. You shouldn't. You shouldn't.
I thought you weren't allowed to play with dolls anymore.
You shouldn't carry around a baby with you. It would be a little bit odd.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a social, and we're going to be there probably around 10 o'clock at night. So
yeah, no, that would be bad parenting.
But you're giving me the bad baby Bjorn.
Oh yes.
Apparently, you have a couple, and you're giving me the bad one.
Well, you know, baby Bjorn's a name brand, so I'm not actually giving you the baby Bjorn, but I'm giving you the version thereof, and we have a couple of different ones. One of them, you know, my wife ended up buying one when we were back in Kentucky once because she decided that we didn't need it. Then she decided that we needed it. So she picked up a less expensive version, and that's the one that you're going to be getting.
Drew, is it actually true that now that Aaron's too big to use the baby Bjorn, now you just actually put a loaf of bread and some deli meat in there and then you just walk around the house with...
I'm more concerned about the fact that we've used the word Bjorn 10 times in about 3 minutes.
Well, we could say Bjork instead and talk about her music.
Or Bjorn Borg. Talk about tennis. There's tennis on right now.
That's also true.
Or Oliver Bjorkstrand.
We just got a question on Twitter, Dave.
Yeah.
I'll let you. Atrocious Jay on Twitter asked us, where were they hiding the Benny outfit all these years? And earlier this week, and as part of the Heritage Classic last weekend, you put on your investigative journalist hat. And you
hard hitting journalism.
And you found out the answer to the question of where had Benny been for the past, you know, all the past years.
That's true. I spoke to our good friend Cal Balhari, who really does a good job at the MTS Center. Does a lot of the production. He's in charge of the production, I should say, at Jets games. And I talked to Kyle. It was happenstance. I was walking at the in IG Field in the press box, and I bumped into him. And I said, "Kyle, maybe you would know," because I was just curious, like where I myself was wondering where had Benny been all these years. And so, sure enough, Kyle gave me the backstory, which I've posted on LegalCurve.com. And I just tweeted it out, but you know, maybe we can tweet it out again.
Sure.
And essentially, it's that the person who had been Benny, the original incarnation of Benny,
like from Jets 1.0,
had caught the outfit.
Yeah.
Had provided
the mascot suit.
Yeah. Although they don't. It's just a mascot. The person. You know, it's
like
an entity.
Yeah.
Entity,
okay.
The
yeah.
entity mm-hmm. that is Benny.
Yes.
And so they had the person's father. Had Benny
had the entity
and contacted Kyle when the Jets came back and said, "I want to give this, you know, it should be returned to you guys for your use." And Kyle said, you know, originally some people were like, "Well, you know, do we really need this? Like we're starting something new." But Kyle, having some vision and knowing that there's most likely going to be a tie to the original Jets, said, "No, we'll take this." And he took it. And obviously the Heritage Classic came up, so they knew they were going to go back to this kind of throwback era. And so they got the entity retrofitted, and they, you know, fixed up the head and stuff like that, and they did some housekeeping to him, got him a new Heritage Classic like 5x XL jersey, and then sure enough, you know, and Drew and I were sitting in the press box as he was there at the game, and
there's no way as he remembers.
No, but to you know, I mean, it was actually crazy because if you think about it, like it was such a nostalgic day for so many of us who grew up. You know, watching those Jets, and of course knowing Benny, and then all of a sudden you hear Benny and the Jets come on the loudspeaker,
sure.
And then they pan to Benny coming out of the crowd, and it's funny the reaction. I mean, I it sounds ridiculous, but he got almost as good a reaction, not as Solani and Howardchuk, but like really, so many people, and it's people are gonna mock and laugh and say, "Oh, who cares about a mascot?" But like, it's the idea of what that means in the era it ties you to. So I think. The Jets really got it right when they did this, and we'll see. For those of you who weren't there on Saturday and didn't get a chance to see Benny, you'll see him. Kyle told me twice more for both times the Jets will wear their Heritage Classic uniform. I think it's against Ottawa.
January 9th against Calgary and then March 19th against Minnesota.
Okay.
That's when they'll wear their Heritage Classic jersey,
right.
And that's when apparently Benny will also be in attendance at the at the Jets games.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they got it right. I think it was a really smart thing. And you know, and go ahead, Des.
I was just going to say, by the way, was Mickey Moose at all jealous that Benny came back?
You know, now I haven't had that's part two of my hard-hitting investigative journalism. It's called the Look from the Other Side. Mm-hmm. What does Mickey Moose think about?
Right.
But
does he feel like he's forgotten?
Well, but I would suspect not simply because there were a lot of co-pictures. People wanted to be in pictures with Benny and Mickey Moose.
Many people don't realize this, that mascots have emotions too.
Okay.
Honest to God. Honest to God. Let's talk about the Buffalo Sabres quickly. We're going to bring in Mike Harrington in a couple minutes. But you're in rare form this morning, I got to tell you.
By the way.
You are in rare form this morning.
I love Benny. I mean, I like Mickey Moose too. But Benny, for me, growing up watching the Jets 1.0, he kind of reminds me. He means as much to Winnipeg as UP does to Montreal. You know, we just had Amanda Stein on. UP's a beauty. He's at all Montreal Canadiens games. He used to be at Expos games, of course. So it's great to see Benny back, and we're going to see him again at MTS Center. Maybe we can go out for a beer with Benny.
Yeah, we'll get right on that. Let's talk about the Buffalo Sabres. They're the Jets' opponent tomorrow afternoon, at MTS Center. A struggling Sabres team thus far this season, 1-3-2 in their first six games. They will play this afternoon as well, as they're going to be on a back-to-back situation tomorrow when they come to Winnipeg. This is a game, I mean, it's certainly not a must win for the Jets, but it's a game that you look at the calendar, you look at the Sabres injuries, you look at how they currently shape up on ice, and that's a game the Jets have to be figuring to themselves, this is a game we should win.
Well, yeah, when you just mentioned it, the Sabres play today, and they just aren't a very good team. And, you know, this team really misses Jack Eichel, guys, and they really miss Evander Kane as well. And it doesn't look like Jack Eichel's coming back anytime soon. And we'll talk to Mike Harrington about that. But Jack Eichel is one of the best young players in the entire league. And he had an underrated rookie season, in my opinion, last year. So, I mean, this team just doesn't have enough offense. And, you know, we should remember, too, that Robin Leonard's been injured. So, I mean, they've had injuries across the board. And many teams have injuries in the NHL. When you look at the Dallas Stars, they're dealing with injuries right now. The Jets are dealing with injuries when it comes to Brian Little. So, I mean, and Andrew Stafford. So, you know, the Sabres right now, you know, they've got a decent group there, and I think, you know, there's a lot of room for growth when you talk about guys like Sam Reinhart, and we just mentioned Jack Eichel, but, you know, Ryan O'Reilly to me is really leading the charge there. Matt Molson's popped in 4 goals, but you look at the rest of the team. Tyler Ennis has got 1 goal. Sam Reinhart has yet to score a goal this year. And again, it goes back to it. They just don't have enough secondary scoring and depth right now, Drew, and I think they're going to be slightly better maybe than they were last year. But still, this isn't a very good team. So, you know, it's Dan Bylsma has his work cut out for him. I think, you know, this team plays hard. They're not an easy team to play against, that's for sure. But when you're really missing a 19-year-old player this much, I think that shows you what kind of depth you have. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, on paper, the Jets should win this game. But having said that, they can't take them lightly either.
You know, it's interesting if you guys remember last year when Evander Kane was making his return to the MTS Center and the Jets were playing Buffalo and they kind of laid an egg, and I think it was like a 3-1 loss to Buffalo. Kind of felt like the beginning of the end of the Jets season last year.
A little bit. And it was, I think, right after January,
yeah,
wasn't it?
And so it's a different time period, of course, but it just felt like, I don't know why, it was one of those games where you felt like the Jets had to win it and they didn't. And it just kind of, after that point, it just felt like the season took a downward spiral. So, I think it's too early to look at it like that, but I just think, like, you know, when you talk about games that the Jets should win, there's no question that, you know, against this Buffalo team coming back on the end of a back-back, and we know how they're going to play. The Jets are going to play them tight, so Jets need to come out and win.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News comes up next to discuss tomorrow's opponent, the Sabres. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.